buildings they've seized, that Ukraine's government would grant them an amnesty unless they're suspected of murder or other serious crimes, and that the government would change Ukraine's constitution in a way, that this is the language used, in a way that would reach out to all regions of Ukraine. Joining us again, DCU lecturer in international relations, Donnacha O'Bachan. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
First of all, I mean, given the serious situation on the ground yesterday with this one gun battle in one city where 13 people were wounded and three were shot dead by pro-Russian forces in that gun battle, is this going to bring about some kind of stability, first of all, and peace, in other words?
Well, that's the aspiration, but the agreement is very, very short in detail. It's just over 200 words. So, you know, when you compare it to something like the Good Friday Agreement, which ran for many, many pages, there's no detail on how this is to be achieved. What I worry about is that when it talks about the, you know, demobilization of illegal armed groups, which, by the way, are not confined, at least in the eyes of the people who signed the agreement, not confined to eastern Ukraine. They're also including people in western Ukraine, the so-called right sector, which Russia is particularly worried about, which it sees as a right-wing group. What I'm worried about is that Russia has said up until now that they have no powers over these people in eastern Ukraine, that they're acting completely on their own initiative. So when they talk about all illegal armed groups must be disarmed, the big question is by whom? And they're leaving it very vaguely to the OSCE, this large security organization, which hasn't a lot of teeth and certainly won't be armed. So they're going to these armed groups monitoring and saying, please disarm, and they don't. It's not quite clear who will enforce it.
Yeah, you can't help but thinking of the beginnings of our own, you mentioned the Good Friday Agreement, our own peace process, where people are, as President Obama, we heard a few minutes ago, are openly sceptical, are openly dubious about the good intentions of the other side. But you've got to start somewhere. Now, the question is the goodwill there or enough of it on all sides?
That's the problem. And again, going back to our own Good Friday Agreement since the day that's in it, you know, we had two sovereign governments who were committed to banging heads, you might say, in Northern Ireland and bringing people together. The problem is that the external actors in Ukraine are not on the same page as the London and Dublin governments were all those years ago.
President Putin is, as you say, very much holding the position that they can. He's entitled to intervene in Ukraine if he wants to.
And very much so, openly
on the very day this deal was signed.
Exactly. He did a marathon session on TV, ran for 4 hours. He does this every year of kind of meet the public. But the questions are very choreographed and orchestrated in advance. And he was asked a number of questions and he came up with some very frank answers. One is that he doesn't really recognise Ukraine as a legitimate entity. He kept talking about the boundaries being artificial, that in the 1920s, eastern Ukraine had been part of Russia. That's very worrying. He, as you said, reserved his right to use force in Ukraine if the situation deteriorated. There was even, admittedly, it was somewhat jocular, a question from the audience about Alaska. Of course, Alaska had been part of Russia until the 1860s and had been signed over as almost like a Crimea-type arrangement in the 1860s. And someone asked, will we take Alaska back? And he said, oh, no, don't get too hasty. We already have enough cold areas.
Okay, there's an awful lot of politics to get to, as some of the pro-Russian forces leaders were saying yesterday. In other words, some of them were saying they're not going to leave the buildings until there's a referendum on autonomy in the Russian-speaking areas. But okay, leaving that aside for the moment, the fact that they agreed that the Organisation for Security and Cooperation in Europe, that it would monitor this, is that the beginning of something that could be real? I mean, how many people does the OSCE have to do a job like this, assuming everyone agrees to allow them in on the ground?
The OSCE has a very small permanent staff. We actually chaired the OSCE, Ireland chaired the OSCE 2 years ago. We took responsibility for a lot of existing conflict resolution processes in the former Soviet Union. Switzerland has the chairmanship now. It's a wonderful choice, actually, because last year it was Ukraine that had the chairmanship of the OSCE. They wouldn't have been able to monitor themselves, obviously. It's a very small organisation. It has a very small permanent staff. Usually they recruit people for special activities like this, and that would be open to everybody, including Irish people. But as I said, their field missions are not armed. They have no coercive leverage.
It's not the United Nations or anything like that. Just one thing I do want to ask you about briefly before we go, and this is, now maybe it's black propaganda, but it is scary to hear it. The agreement commits everyone to oppose intolerance, particularly anti-Semitism, and yet on the day of the agreement was signed, you hear about these flyers in Donetsk being distributed, ordering Jews to register with the authorities.
Yeah, there have been reports of that. They haven't been verified, and some people suspect that they might be just simple propaganda because it's circulating on the internet. You know, if that's the case, it wouldn't be the first time that concern for Jews in Ukraine has been used for political purposes, because, of course, up until now, Russia's main justification, their own self-declared justification for intervening, was that the Ukrainian government had been taken over by fascists. And even though the Jewish organizations in Ukraine came out publicly and said, look, if you're going to intervene in Ukraine, don't do it on our behalf because we don't feel discriminated against. Russia did what it did. So in other words, it is a matter of concern, obviously, but I think it's been exaggerated for political purposes.
Donal Corbacho, thank you very much.